The NFL draft, it is over. We've got all the answers you need for those rookie drafts. We're going to help you figure out who you should be taking where. We're going to go through three rounds of a Superflex rookie mock draft tonight. Some of the best dynasty minds I could bring on. Let's get into it. That is right. Joined as always by my co-host, Rich. But most importantly, we are joined by Max from the hot seat. How are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, really, really good. Loving seeing all of the NFL draft as always. And I mean, it's great to rip up most of your notes from pre-draft and start all over again, right? So can't wait to do that now. I couldn't think of a better company to be in. How are you guys doing? You all right?
Yep, living the dream, you know. I mean, it's just one of the most fun weeks of the year. Lewis, like, I know you've been busy. You weren't as in front of the TV as much as you'd have hoped, but did you manage to cram in a decent amount of the draft this weekend?
The only day that I managed to watch was day three. So I felt like a true degenerate sitting and getting excited over like, oh, which of the OT, like 20 to 25 do I want the Rams to take? But it was really good fun. I was also at my brother's wedding, because he's a Rams fan as well, on my phone, just sort of like across the table when I could get catch his eye being like, Blake Corum in the third.
Lovely stuff. Well, there is lots to get into, and we are going to answer a ton of questions as we go through it. So we are going to dive into a Superflex rookie mock draft, tight end premium. We'll throw that into the mix as well. And Rich, I'm going to come to you for the 101 because it feels fairly straightforward. Anything changed whatsoever in the last couple of days? Did anybody get closer to the Caleb Williams tier?
No, I think, you know, it's been the 101 for the last 3 months. I don't think anything, well, we knew what draft pick was going to happen. I think the Bears landing Odunze at 9, if anything, makes his landing spot even better. We were talking in the Discord this morning saying, I think it's probably going to be about 70% of Superflex drafts where Caleb Williams goes 1. To be honest, in my eyes, it should be higher than 70%. I just think some people are going to balk the trend of going QB early and go and grab a wide receiver.
Yep. Guys, either of you, before we move on to where things kind of get less predictable, did either of you feel like anyone got any closer to Caleb Williams, Max?
No. Lewis, I agree. No. I think they got further away.
Perfect. All right. Well, Lewis, we'll come to you for the 102. Who do you want to go with here?
Yeah, so this is pretty easy for me as well. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. As Rich said with the Caleb Williams pick, is exactly the same with MHJ. This is the landing spot that we've expected basically since the draft order was set in stone. It's a great landing spot with a very good quarterback and also a very clear depth chart as well. So he has a path to really a ceiling of 150 targets in his rookie season and was the clear wide receiver one for me.
How high would you be willing to draft him in redraft, Lewis? Because right now in best ball drafts, the Arizona landing spot seemed incredibly predictable. And if it wasn't there, it was most likely going to be the LA Chargers, which might have been less fun, but still a good landing spot with a good quarterback. And he's gone as a solid second round pick pretty much throughout early best ball, pre-draft, best ball contests. Would you be happy drafting him in the middle of a second round?
So we talked through this recently when we looked at our top 24 for 2024. And I think to me, I'd probably take him towards the back of the second round. Rookie wide receivers normally, in the last few years, we've definitely seen performing fantastically very early on. We had, I think it was 2 in the top 24 this season. I think Jaden Reed just missed out, but he might have been at wide receiver 24, dependent on format. And then obviously Puka and Jordan Addison just ahead of him. So to me, Marvin Harrison Jr., the landing spot's elite, the talent's elite. I think probably back of the second, I feel pretty comfortable.
Nice. Okay, Max, 103. This is where the opinions seem to start differing. I know you've been mock drafting since January, so have we. Yeah. We've seen a load of different things play out. Now that we have all the information, we have all the landing spots, what do you feel most comfortable doing with 103?
This is one, if I've got the 103 in multiple leagues, I'm not picking the same. I'm picking multiple different players here. I think for the sake of today, I'll go with Jaden Daniels because I think he has the higher upside than a Drake May. But his upside is, like we kind of spoke about Anthony Richardson, his upside because of that rushing is absolutely huge. So I'll go Jaden Daniels. But to be honest, if you asked me tomorrow, I'd go Drake May. I think they're neck and neck for me. They're in the same tier.
Yeah. Okay. So given how good his spot is, because we've spent a lot of time talking about Caleb Williams landing with DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, and, you know, Keenan Allen, and then the tight ends are decent players, the running backs are fairly decent. But you can't really forget about the fact that Jayden Daniels got Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, who we all felt good about this time a year ago, Luke McCaffrey added to the mix. Then you've got two tight ends in Zach Ertz and Ben Sinnott, who are pretty decent, two running backs who are pretty decent in Brian Robinson, and even Austin Eckler, who looked a bit dusty last year, but is a good pass catching back. How high do you think Jayden Daniels' ceiling could be for year one?
Quarterback one overall. Like that, he could be quarterback one overall. Like, that is how much talent he has. He could also be quarterback 32. Like, it really is. It just depends on how willing he is to make sensible choices. He's a bit of a, like, he's a risk taker, I think. And some of the risks that he could take in college may backfire on him, both in terms of interceptions and his own health next year. So if he can kind of pull back a little bit, just enough, he could be really something special. So, yeah, his ceiling is quarterback one overall.
Lovely. We'll get to 1 and 4 in a second. But if you found us tonight for the first time, now's the time to hit the subscribe button. Best ball season kicks off tomorrow. Underdog Show every Monday, DraftKings Wednesday. Rich has got his Dynasty Rookie Rankings video coming out very soon. Loads more content that's going to get you set up to win in 2024. Rich, 104, where are you going?
So, for me, I'm delighted that Mags has gone Jayden Daniels at 3. Because I think that, yes, whilst you talked about the receiving talent that Washington has added this offseason is fantastic to pair with Dotson and McLaurin, I have got serious concerns about the offensive line. It looks like they're going to be starting a third round rookie at left tackle. Like, Jayden Daniels has got a horrendous pressure to sack ratio. You talked about the potential to get hit. I think we need to talk about this more. There is a serious world where Jayden Daniels gets destroyed. The offensive line's not going to be helping him out. He's going to be running for his life. So, yeah, I'm delighted that Mags has taken that concern away from me, taking Jayden Daniels off the board. I'm going to go Malik Nabers. I think that this guy is an elite talent. Any other year, we'd be talking about him as that superstar wide receiver one. I think in New York, I think he's going to get absolutely force-fed targets. I've heard a few people criticize him because of the potential quarterback concern. Now, no wide receiver is quarterback proof, but I think with the type of targets he's going to be getting in that intermediate area of the field, the quality of targets is less important than someone that's going to be getting targeted further downfield. So, quite frankly, whoever the quarterback is, I'm not that concerned. I think this guy could see 150 targets as a rookie, if not more. And I think his ceiling is higher than the Marvin Harrison, which, you know, seems quite ridiculous to be saying, quite frankly.
So I just want to go back on a couple of points you mentioned there. So the Commanders, they did only take one offensive lineman in all 7 rounds of the draft, and it was definitely a glaring need of position. Do you think there's anything in drafting Ben Sinnott, the big tight end who you wrote up as an excellent blocker in your amazing rookie guide? Do you think there's anything to taking a player like that? Is he going to be the additional lineman out there to try and take some of the heat away for Jayden Daniels?
I really hope so, because if they're relying on Zach Ertz to block, I think they've got some serious concerns. But I think if the answer to trying to protect your new franchise quarterback is drafting a tight end that is a competent blocker, I think you've got serious concerns. So, yeah, look, they threw some money at Tyler Biadasz in from Dallas and the Kansas City guard, whose name Allegretti, I want to say, whose name escapes me. They're Luke kind Allegretti. Of replacement level guys. I don't think we're getting anything special there. I've got serious concerns about what they're doing at left tackle. And I think that this is going to be a bad offensive line with a quarterback who doesn't cope well with pressure. So to me, that's a serious concern.
So, and just kind of got lost a second. Was that Drake May you went with at 104?
No, Malik Nabers, sorry.
Malik Nabers, sorry, my bad. Okay, we've got a couple of questions in the chat. Let's just pause momentarily. Have this choice of Daniels and Nabers myself. Is there an argument actually with injuries and vets that passable QB production is easier to find than high-end wide receiver production? You go back and look last year, nobody expected Joe Flacco to be the quarterback who was carrying you at fantasy victories. Lewis, how do you feel about this question?
I definitely think there's an argument for it. And I think when we look back at the last few years of drafts and we look at the most valuable players now, I mean, if you look back at the 2021 draft, so Trevor Lawrence versus Ja'Marr Chase was going quite low down because it was Lawrence, consensus 101, then Justin Fields, and then potentially you were starting to look at Chase. Obviously, if you were to redraft that now, you'd probably take Ja'Marr Chase at the 101. Looking at last year as well, I mean, and obviously when we get back to the Kenny Pickett draft, obviously we were taking wide receivers over Kenny Pickett, but people will reach on first round quarterbacks, which I think is something we'll probably get onto in a minute. I think to me, it depends when it comes to your situation. If you're just looking for upside, if you have pretty, you know, you have a high end starter as a QB1, you've got a solid starter as a QB2, you can take Jaden Daniels with the knowledge that, as Mag said, he could be the QB1 overall. He has that ability in his legs. If you don't feel like you can take that risk on him, then I can absolutely understand the safety of going towards Malik Nabers instead, who is probably going to slot straight in as a wide receiver 2 or high-end wide receiver 3 because of the offense.
Yeah, Mags, any arguments against that? Would you rather have it the other way around?
No, I think you're absolutely spot on, Lewis. I'm looking at my team. I'm thinking, what are my needs? I'm delighted getting this draft is so good. I'm just happy getting either of these guys, to be honest. If I get Nabers, I'm dancing. If I get Daniels, I'm delighted as well. So I'm happy either way.
My quick question, Tom, is to, I can't remember his name. Is it Jack? Can you trade back one spot and pick up an asset? Like, if you can't make that decision, let somebody else make that decision for you. Can you go from, I'm presuming he's got the 103, can he have a chat with a guy at 104, say, throw me, you know, a second, a random flex player, and make him make the decision, and then you don't have to.
Yeah, and absolutely. And if you've got questions like that, the best place for them is our Fantasy Sanctuary Discord. You can join like Michael, you can join like Sean, who both joined today, get access to Rich's rookie guide, almost 200 pages, 118 player write-ups in there, so many dynasty tools, so many of us in the Discord helping people make the right choices, make the choices that they want to make. It's absolutely the place to be. Hit the join button down below. And we are back to Lewis at the 105. Where are you going with this pick?
So this one's pretty easy for me, which is Drake May. I actually have him at the 103. I can understand that people are a little bit suspect about the landing spot in New England, although they did obviously go out and take two pretty talented wide receivers, one with the second pick or the third pick in the second round. Drake May, to me, has a really high ceiling. He's someone that seems to be a bit controversial within both fantasy and NFL circles. And to me, I never really understood it. I think he's super accurate. I think I know his decision making is the thing that people pinpoint on, but he has, you know, basically an ideal NFL toolkit when it comes to his size, his arm strength, and also his mobility. I think he's got sneaky upside for some rushing touchdowns as well. 6'4", 223. And to me, we're talking dynasty. I can understand if you need a QB for this year, Jaden Daniels is more likely to outscore Drake May, but for the long term, situations change very quickly. We also aren't good judges of situations, as we saw with the Texans last year. If we see Jalen Polk and Javon Baker develop for the Patriots, things could turn around pretty quickly. And Rich's love Kendrick Bourne as well. So Drake May for me here is a pretty easy selection.
Okay, so each of you, give us a prediction on how many weeks Drake May sits, if any. Lewis, start with yourself, and then go with Mags and Rich.
I think, if it was any other franchise, I'd say none, but I think probably 3 or 4.
Mags?
I think he plays week 1.
Nice.
Rich?
Nice. I'm going to go like 12, 13 weeks. I'm just trying to pull up the schedule. Have their schedule been released yet?
No, we're about 3 weeks away from schedule release.
Oh, well, there you go. So, yeah, I reckon that they're not going to rush it. Look, I think they'll realise that this team is not built to win now. What's the point in rushing it? They've got a really good backup. Let's take it easy. I love the quarterback, but he's got some footwork he needs to iron out. So let's iron that out and not rush him and bring him in probably after the bye. And let's hope he's got a late bye week, so I'm close to being right.
I always end up on the more optimistic side of these things, and sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't, but I'm going to say none. I think when you look at this team, you look at this wide receiver core, it's a young team. It's best to get out there. I don't think the Patriots are under any illusion that they're going to be a playoff team necessarily this year. And I just think some of these, we see year after year that getting on the field can be a big difference. And I'm going to go, yeah, like Mags, week one. Mags, where are you going with 106?
I do. I really didn't wish I didn't have this one. I wish I had the one after this because
I think this might be. let me throw you a trade offer. Would you take Drake London or the 106?
Oh, I'll take the 106 all day over that bum. Absolutely. Because here, I think I'm going to go, I think, maybe a little bit spicy here. I'm not sure, but this is where I'm going to take JJ McCarthy, actually. I think just with that landing spot, landing at the Minnesota Vikings with Justin Jefferson there, I think he can come in. I trust Kevin O'Connell. I think that they'll have the right tools in place for him there to succeed. Let's not forget Aaron Jones there too. That's a nice piece for him. So I know a lot of people probably screaming Roma Dunze. Don't love the amount of mouths to feed there. So I'll take JJ McCarthy ahead of Roma Dunze, something which I didn't expect to say a couple of months ago.
I think one thing that's kind of also worth remembering, and I come back to time and time again when I'm thinking about fantasy football, is how good is the defense? Yes, we know the Vikings possibly overpaid to trade within the first round to make sure they got the cornerback they're taking, whose name eludes me right now. But that defense isn't suddenly going to be great. We saw last year that they put the offense in pass-heavy situations frequently. The J.J. McCarthy of Michigan is not going to be the J.J. McCarthy of Minnesota. He's going to have to pass. And that just spells only good things for fantasy football. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think we'll see a wide range of outcomes for him in this first round of rookie mock drafts, but I do not hate that pick there at all. Rich, would you have taken McCarthy that high?
Yeah, McCarthy was my pick. Yeah, sniped by Mags. But yeah, I think that landing spot is phenomenal. And I think he could be... He's got every tool. It's just small sample size, isn't it? So I think the ceiling is there. And I think given the offensive line, the receiving talent, the play calling, he's landed with on his feet, so hopefully he's going to hit the ground running. With the seventh pick, though, I am going to probably get a little bit spicy, Mags, and I'm going to steal a Kansas City Chief. I'm going to go with Xavier Worthy here at the 107.
Great decision.
Okay, so Rich, we've done enough of these where after Xavier Worthy ran that record-breaking 40-yard dash, you were worried that you wouldn't get much of him in rookie drafts. Now that, you know, you've got all the data, you've put him through your model, and you have him very highly. How annoyed are you about it?
I mean, look, it's all relative, isn't it? I think that if anything now, we're probably going to get that world of, oh, people are overhyping Xavier Worthy, he's not that good. So maybe it all comes back to me and I'm going to get loads of Xavier Worthy. But I think for me, I have him almost neck and neck with Adunze and Brian Thomas. I could easily have picked any of those three here. I think the answer is probably trade back two picks, take whichever one's left on the board or whichever one you've not got shares of, because I think that they are, I can make an argument for every single one of them at this seventh overall pick. But for me, I think that Xavier Worthy is slightly ahead of the two. From a model perspective, Xavier Worthy is in the tier with Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers. And that's about 8% ahead of Roma Dunze and Brian Thomas. So analytically, he should be being picked a couple of picks earlier. But I think that the landing spot, I think how Andy Reid's going to use him, and let's be honest, Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to get him the ball all three levels of the field. And I think he's going to be an absolute matchup nightmare for defenses. So, yeah, very excited at Xavier Worthy and very excited that one of these years, all of the player I've hyped since January has actually turned out to be good and, yeah, not been Kayshon Boutte'd.
Well, we'll bypass Mags because we know that his Kansas City Chiefs will make him feel pretty good about Xavier Worthy. But, Lewis, do you think there's any negatives to it? Could you take Xavier Worthy as the wide receiver 3 of 107?
So to me, he's my wide receiver four, but it's very much he's in the same tier with Adunze and above Brian Thomas Jr. I absolutely loved Worthy before the combine, which I think is the point that you have to make clear, that it wasn't double counting seeing someone run fast and go, yep, he's fast. We knew he was fast. It was actually his route running and his ability to work at all three levels of the field that I really liked when I watched his film as well. I could see an argument for taking him over Adunze as well. For me personally, I probably wouldn't do it, but probably similar to what the guys mentioned before, that probably if I had this pick and both of them were available, I'd see if the guy behind me was either a Chiefs fan or a Bears fan and see if they wanted to move up one spot to get their guy.
So where are you going with this pick, the 108? It was viewed as kind of, you know, this was the end of the tier break pre-draft. Do you still feel it's the end of the tier break, or is there enough here where you'd be comfortable with going back even maybe two spots?
It's the end of a little tier break to me, but it's not quite as big as we thought it was previously. So beforehand, you had Brock Bowers at the end of this tier normally, and then it was a big jump down to whoever your wide receiver four was, and no one was really sure who was going to emerge. My next tier after is a tier of three, and to be honest, if I could move back and get a little bit on top of, so Rome Adunze would be my pick at 108, but if I could get something on top of him, and get Brian Thomas Jr. or Brock Bowers, I'd be relatively happy. With Adunze, the landing spot, the draft capital is absolutely fantastic. The landing spot probably is in the long term. Obviously, it's a bit crowded at the moment with DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and obviously Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, and DeAndre Swift as a pass catching back. But he has the opportunity to develop a chemistry with Caleb Williams, who I think he fits really well with. And Keenan Allen probably will only be there for a year. He's only on a 1 year deal and he's 32. So I can understand why in year one, people are probably a little bit low on the landing spot for Rome Adunze. But actually, if you're looking a little longer term, and potentially there's going to be a buy window for him midway through the season when he's not absolutely exploded. But the talent for me means that I'm perfectly happy taking him here.
Okay, Mags, like, how do you feel about that kind of, like, if you were to try and take a shot at projecting what this Bears receiver room is going to look like at the end of the season? Does Rome Adunze end up as the wide receiver three in points per game, or is it DJ Moore or Keenan Allen?
Probably Rome Adunze, right? Although they're very different players, this kind of reminds me of Jackson Smith and Jigba last year, right? He's joining this crowded room and everyone's kind of saying, you know what? I'll still take him here because I'm not drafting him for this year. I'm drafting him for down the line. I feel very similar about Rome Adunze. I like the talent. I like the player. Just maybe not going to be his year next year, but eventually it will be. And you have to remember, guys, Rome was not built in a day.
Oh, God. Oh. Well, just to try and get us away from that stench. The one thing that, like, I would also point out is Caleb Williams isn't Geno Smith, is he? I think we all think more of him. I think he's going to be a more creative quarterback, and it's going to be a more wide receiver friendly scheme with where they see it going, hopefully. But where are you going at the 109, Mags?
Tie in premium, right?
Yep, why not?
Yeah, give me Brock Bowers here then, right? I'll why not? Yeah, give me Brock Bowers. I'll take him. I mean, some people were sort of concerned about this landing spot, but I mean, Michael Mayer, he was always a guy that came in that was a better pass blocker. He was better at the blocking side of the tight end game than he was as a receiver. That's why we seen Michael Mayer drop last year to tight end, people's tight ends, you know, three, four, even by the end of it. So I'm not really worried too much about Michael Mayer and taking away things from Brock Bowers. I think there you've got Devontae Adams, who's not going to stick around for ages either. They'll hopefully address the quarterback position as well. I think it's actually a pretty good landing spot for Brock Bowers. I'm not really worried about him at all. So I'm happy taking him at nine.
So my refute to that would be, we talk time and time again about how landing spot at tight end probably matters more than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And here we look at it and it's like, okay, well, you've got Gardner Minshew, who wasn't particularly accurate or a particularly efficient quarterback last year, or Aiden O'Connell, who is even less so in both categories. Yeah. Then when it comes to the tight end position, What Dalton Kincaid fell victim to at times last year is you get taken off the field if you're not being used on the blocking snaps. We don't want them to be elite blockers. We don't want them to be the kind of players who turn into just blockers. But they need to be able to do both so that it doesn't tip the hand when we're on the field. And I think Michael Mayer, as a second-year tight end who is a good blocker, is going to have a big leg up to start the season. And I think it really is going to be year two, year three, before we start seeing those kind of bigger spike weeks from Brock Bowers. And also, if you're waiting that long, how much does it reduce the value of a pick when you're talking about a first-year pick? I mean, we already saw Jackson Smith and Jigba. His value drop from last year to this year feels quite substantial. I mean, Rich, if Bowers gives us kind of like an average of 7 PPR points per game, which isn't that unusual at the tight end position, 8 or so, and has a couple of blow-up weeks similar to like what Kincaid did, do you see him still having first-round value next year?
I think he'd probably have first-round value, but I think his value is definitely going to drop. I mean, at the moment, he's my tight end 4. I think most people have got him in that kind of tight end 2, tight end 3 range, along with Laporta and McBride. And I think that to be drafting him this early, that's kind of where you're placing his value. And it does concern me that you're drafting a guy where you're sort of saying, okay, best case scenario, he's kind of what, 2A, 2B with Jacoby Myers in terms of targets. But he also might not see the field all the time. I think in an ideal world, he's that movable tight end piece where he's not going to come off the field. He's going to be the slot receiver in 3 receiver sets. And the Raiders will just run a lot of 2 wide receiver, 2 tight end sets. But you then look at like Cole Kmet last year with Luke Getsy, who's the new offensive coordinator for the Raiders. He lined up in line over 60% of the time. And it's just like, Luke Getsy isn't that inventive, creative, offensive mind that we're all dreaming of. And I don't know if he's the kind of person that's going to get the best and creative usage out of Brock Bowers. So I love the player. I say every year, tight end landing spot is 100% critical, but we don't understand as a community and like what makes a good tight end landing spot. And I hold my hands up, you know, I can't analyze a tight end landing spot, whether it be offensive play call, or whether it be targets, whether it be role, whatever, because tight end is such a unique beast. And yeah, hopefully Brock Bowers gets used in inventive ways, gets moved around the field and gets a high target volume, but we can't guarantee that. And so for me, I'd have gone another wide receiver over Brock Bowers here, but I think the ceiling is there to go and chase Brock Bowers. Absolutely.
I think, if you don't mind me coming in, I think part of the issue for me with the landing spot is it almost felt like Brock Bowers was the consolation pick for the Raiders. So it didn't feel like they were coming into it going, you know, we've planned what we want to do with Brock Bowers. This is where we're going to go the whole time. It felt like, well, you know, we're picking at whatever it was, 13 or 14. One of the quarterbacks will still be there. We'll get the quarterback 5 or 6. And then all of them went beforehand and they went, well, we'll just take the last blue chip talent left. So it wasn't like, you know, they spent the whole offseason thinking through with their offensive coordinator, we think we're going to be in a range to get Brock Bowers. What are we going to do with him? This is the plan. It was very much, okay, well, this hasn't gone our way. We haven't ended up with the last of the first round quarterbacks, or what ends up being the first round quarterbacks. So I guess we'll just take the blue chip player and be happy with that.
Yeah, there's a couple of items in the chat which I want to get to. So Rory, one of our YouTube members, hit join below if you want access to a load of great stuff. He mentions that Tank Dell was involved in a shooting today, minor injury. Apparently it was a 16-year-old arrested after the shooting of 10 people, which obviously sounds very horrendous, and we hope there's nothing too serious there. But if we're saying that it was just a very minor injury, then no, I mean, this feels like the kind of stuff which, it's April, unless we hear other reports. For now, I wouldn't be worrying about it. I definitely wouldn't be selling low on a player that we all love. And then just getting to a question from the Retro Coach, one of my favorite followers on Twitter. We have a rookie draft where we can cash in a regular draft pick, round 1 through round 13, and take a rookie. However, the rookie would be on the can't cut list. I already have Caleb. Any other names? I'm not sure if I'm quite getting that. Does anyone...
I think this is an old school ESPN type league. I'd read this as Yeah, basically any player that we've kind of talked through to this point, I guess, I'd probably be happy to take anyone in the top 15, 16 picks as to guys that I'm giving a round 1 to 13 draft pick up for, quite frankly.
Cool. Well, let's move on to the 110. We are back to Rich, I believe, of the 110. Does that seem right?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's you. Okay.
I'll go Brian Thomas Jr. I talked about this with the Worthy pick. To me, there's three wide receivers in a tier. Look, I feel like we could be sitting here in 2 years and talking about Brian Thomas as the most valuable player from this draft class. Like, there is a scenario where he comes in and is an absolute superstar. His ability to go deep is better than probably 95% of receivers in the NFL already. Like, he is phenomenal at that. And pairing with Trevor Lawrence, it could be amazing. There is a lot of risk in there. I've got some concerns about his route run ability. I've got concerns about him operating that middle area of the field. But if you've got a world where you've got Brian Thomas outside, Gabe Davis doing the dirty work, Christian Kirk running out the slot, this offense is starting to make sense now. And I think that Brian Thomas could be an absolute superstar. So yes, swing for the fences, aim for the ceiling, and yeah, be very happy to be taking Brian Thomas 10th overall. It feels like good value right here.
I know what you're saying about working the middle of a field, but like, Calvin Ridley was never asked to work the middle of a field, was he? It was like, this Jags offense, it's like everyone has very set roles, and Calvin Ridley was kept on the boundary a lot, and those high difficulty sort of catches, which aren't always as friendly. You know, we'd like to see him work in the middle of the field a little bit better, but I do think that he's gonna fall into a very nice role. I mentioned in the draft winners and losers video put out yesterday that Calvin Ridley left behind 136 targets, and for everyone who gets all upset about that, yes, targets are earned to an extent, but 136 targets is an awful lot. Lewis, would you have taken Brian Thomas if Rich didn't?
Yeah, I definitely would have been the same there. Like I said, this is a tier of three for me, so there's still one guy left that I'd be quite happy with at the 111. But Brian Thomas Jr. to me is in the same tier. So yeah, I'd be relatively happy. It was a good landing spot, and I think it's kind of what we're anticipating the whole time, was him being wide receiver 4 off the board, and probably to the Jags.
So where are you going with this pick, Lewis?
I don't feel great about it, but I would take Bo Nix. So Bo Nix, for a while in the process, was my QB4 above JJ McCarthy. I wasn't hugely into McCarthy. Then ended up at QB5 for me, and that's where he's now going to sit afterwards. It was kind of between him and Penix, which is interesting. Obviously, Penix going earlier than Nix, so the draft capital being flipped, but Bo Nix being taken earlier in terms of my rankings. He's kind of he felt a very safe prospect to me. He's mobile enough, he's got a strong enough arm, he's accurate enough. You know, the upside isn't hugely there, but I think he goes to actually a sneakily quite good situation with some solid running backs in Javonte Williams, Cortland Sutton, Greg Dulcich, Marvin Mims. I can't remember who the wide receiver was. Troy Franklin, obviously. They went out and got him. What felt like him at the end of day two, going, how on earth is this guy still here? Go and get me my guy. And they moved up for him. And obviously Sean Payton as a creative offensive play caller who has a lot of experience with a quarterback that didn't have a great deep ball and a particularly strong arm. So if you can get, you know, if you can be at the end of the first round and get a quarterback who's going to be a day one starter, and because they're not going to be starting Jarrett Stidham or Zach Wilson over him, and get someone who the situation's all right. You know, they had top 15 draft capital. They're going to start. You know, the upside isn't hugely there, but I think it's probably the cheapest that you'll get him. You struggle to send late firsts for a lot of similarly ranked quarterbacks. I think you'd struggle to get one for someone around that kind of Matt Stafford, Baker Mayfield type tier, and I'd be perfectly happy slotting him in that when it comes to my dynasty rankings.
Nice. Mags, you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Are you worried about the moves Denver are making? Are they becoming more competitive, or do you see them just still as there's a long way for them to be a good team?
No, the only people that need to be worried are the young mothers of Denver with Zach Wilson and Bo Nix on the prowl.
Okay, so after I kind of crapped on your last pick of Brock Bowers and then Rich stuck my knife in a little bit, where are you going with the 112?
I'm gonna take the first running back off the board. I'm gonna go Jonathan Brooks. He ended up at the Carolina Panthers. See, that's, you shouldn't have made fun of the Brock Bowers pick. I'm gonna go with him. I just think he was my running back one already before the draft, and then he ends up going to Carolina. I'm not expecting him to play day one. Obviously, he's got that injury that he needs to get over, but yeah, I think that's a great landing spot for him. They're starting to build something there, Carolina, as well. So hopefully they can take a bit of pressure off Bryce Young as well and get Jonathan Brooks running soon enough. So yeah, I think he gets a point right back into the first round, bro.
Yeah, and I do think we're going to see a range of Jonathan Brooks sneaking up to that sort of 1-9, 1-10 in certain drafts because people won't be able to help themselves. Speaking of running backs, David in the chat, I just traded the 108 in 2024 and a 2025 second mid, he's speculating, in a 10-team Superflex non-tight end premium for Jonathan Taylor. Did I win that? I still have 105, 203, and 206 this year and all my picks next year. Adds to that he's contending this year, weak at running back before getting Jonathan Taylor. I don't dislike it myself. I think, you know, when you're talking about the running backs which you can get in this class, it's obviously a gulf of a difference between Jonathan Taylor. I do think Jonathan Taylor is still living slightly off of reputation as a player who had a couple of really good years to start his career. And since then, he's not been over 4.5 yards per carry in the last 2 years. He's, you know, been outside the top 12 running backs in points per game for two consecutive years. But Rich, how do you feel about that trade?
Yeah, I think it's a fair trade. I think if it's the kind of thing that can push you over the top as a contender, I'm fine with it. What I would say is don't project 2025 picks. It's one of my bugbears. I think an awful lot can happen over the next 6-9 months. Let's just call it a 2025 second and not project it. And yeah, I think given it's a 10-team league, that probably makes me feel a little bit better about it because it's, you know, you're paying up for an elite talent. So yeah, it's okay. I wouldn't say you absolutely won it by a mile, but I wouldn't say it was a bad trade. I think it's fair.
Yeah, and Lewis, I got a question for you from Rory in our Discord. If you already roster Kirk Cousins, does that make getting Michael Penix slightly more of a priority?
No. Handcuffing quarterbacks is not a particularly smart way to go, especially when you're probably going to end up spending kind of early to mid second round capital to do it. I know, and we've had a lot of people in the Discord talking about kind of, oh, well, there were a lot of quarterback injuries last year, so do we need to look at the backup when we're taking the wide receiver, or should we be handcuffing late on? No, definitely not. The problem is that then you're sort of guaranteeing that you can only start one of those quarterbacks. You're not putting yourself in a position where you go, well, I have all of these elite quarterbacks. And there's a world in which Michael Penix doesn't start until the 2026 season, in which case you've spent probably an early second, a mid second on someone you're not going to get any value from. If you want Michael Penix, if you think he's going to be good when he eventually starts, age 32, go and trade for him mid-season. Do what people did with Jordan Love, where people go, yeah, I'm going to take this player, I'm going to let him sit, I'm going to, you know, eventually he's going to start for me. 3 months pass, and then they go, why aren't they doing anything? Why aren't they startable? So go and trade for him then. But I wouldn't, there isn't any situation where I'd be interested in handcuffing a quarterback.
The Jordan Love stuff is, I mean, it's already becoming laborious, but it's one of those, remembering that, and even with the Sean Watson situation to a certain point, there are peaks and troughs in not only the value of the players, but where your team's at, when it makes sense to go out and buy those players. And perhaps there'll be a situation where if you've got Kirk Cousins, and you're just looking to shore things up, it might make sense. But on the whole, yeah, give me Bo Nix and Kirk Cousins over Michael Penix and Kirk Cousins all day. Rich, 201, where are you going? We'll pick up the pace slightly as we get into the second and third round.
Yeah, I'm a bit annoyed that Brooks has just gone there, but I'll go Keon Coleman. I think phenomenal landing spot. I love the way that the Bills are already talking about using him all over the field. And I think that it could be a case of let's just get the ball in his hands and see what he can do after the catch, because he could be a beast.
Lovely. Mags, how do you feel about this kind of range in the draft? Is there a few players you like, or are you starting to scramble a little bit?
Still loads of players that I'm liking here, actually. I think there's still plenty of good value, especially quite rarely. The wide receiver position is still pretty good value going in the second round.
So where are you going? Is it a wide receiver catching your eye?
A couple of wide receivers catching my eye. I'm going to go with a guy, I think potentially maybe overdrafting him a little bit, but again, landing spot, love it. I really like where Ladd McConkey's ended up here at the LA Chargers. I think he's got a path to lots of targets. He's a really good separator as well. So I think we'll see Ladd McConkey come in. There's not a huge amount of competition there. Yeah, I'll take a shot on him in the second round.
Lovely stuff. And Lewis, how about you at the 203?
So I probably would have gone with Ladd McConkey if he was available. But for me, even though the wide receiver position is really deep here, and actually I think that my next eight selections are, aside from this player in my rankings, would all be at the wide receiver position, because we have a lot of day two talent, round two talent, and actually a couple of day one players left. But I'd actually go with Trey Benson. He was my pre-draft RB1. I really like the landing spot on the Cardinals. There's a real path to significant playing time there. James Conner is already 28 and is a free agent at the end of the season. They took him in the third round, which is obviously what we want, day two capital for running backs. And I really liked the player. I was going to say love the player, but I didn't love any of the running backs. But liking him a lot was still enough to put him as my RB1.
So the running back position for the Cardinals has been pretty fruitful over the last couple of years. Kyler Murray does check down of a running back position a bit more often than the likes of Lamar Jackson, the likes of, you know, even Josh Allen's kind of in the same range. But do you think that Trey Benson can step into being a three down workhorse running back that we want in, say, a year's time?
I definitely think so. He was one of the only players when watching that I thought potentially had the ability for a three down skill set. One of the only issues that I had with him was just running a bit high, but I think that's the sort of thing that can definitely be coached out of him. But the athleticism is really, really strong. He's a big back as well. Not quite as elusive as you might want, but very physical, and also relatively strong in pass protection, although I don't think you want to judge too much from pass protection from the college level, because it doesn't translate 100%. But yeah, he was a player that I really liked, and I definitely could see him taking on a three down skill set. I also don't think, because they took him very high in the third round as well. I think spending that sort of capital on a running back, you want someone that you think is going to have a three down skill set. And I think we've seen with the way that the running backs were taken in this draft, that teams shied away from kind of those one trick ponies a little bit.
I love your point about pass protection, because last year, and I was guilty of it, we spent a lot of time talking about how Roshon Johnson was an excellent pass protector, and then he ranked about 42nd in pass protection among running backs on PFF. Yeah. So it's not always something that translates. Rich, at the 204, how are you feeling about this?
Yeah, I think to echo what Lewis said, there's a lot of players in a tier here. I think if I could trade back, I probably would. I think anything from probably 202 to about 208 is pretty much a flat tier for me. But I'm going to go Ricky Pearsall. I like the player. I don't love the player. I love the landing spot. I love the draft capital. And I think that this is the kind of pick that we're playing Dynasty. This could look very smart in 3 months' time if Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel are traded, or perhaps Ayuk's not extended. And worst case scenario, I think he's a year away from being a really useful receiver in a Shanahan-led offense that's going to put up solid, decent, reliable kind of wide receiver 3-4 numbers for fantasy, which at the early to mid second, that feels like a value.
I see this as the latest chapter in our constant war we've been having for about a year between Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, but we can carry that discussion on another day. Max, would you have taken Ricky Pearsall that high, or were you thinking he might slip to you further down?
I'm the same as Rich here. I've got a load of guys sort of sitting around in the same tier. And yeah, you're right. It's really good to think about what happens. I think at this stage, not if, but when Brandon Ayuk isn't a San Francisco 49er, if not this year, then next year. So yeah, I think that's a good pick.
Cool. Where are you going with your pick?
I'm going to go ahead and take Xavier Leggett here. I think he's got a chance to come into this sort of, you know, this new look Carolina Panthers. My main concern with him is Deontay Johnson and how many targets he's going to command. But I think Leggett can come in and yeah, probably still come in, and he can get a good slice of the pie as well there at Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Deontay Johnson's such a target hog, and we're a big fan of him. But
yeah,
they need options. Bryce Young needs options, and that depth chart is slowly looking more functional. When you can push Adam Thielen down to at least wide receiver 2, possibly wide receiver 3, it definitely feels a little bit better. Lewis, of a 206, who's taking your fancy?
Yeah, so I think the last two picks and then mine here are a really interesting one when it comes to how do you rate draft capital compared to your pre-draft ranking? Because I'd go with A.D. Mitchell here, who I had over both Ricky Pearsall and Xavier Leggett. Now, obviously, they both went round one, surprisingly, with the last two picks of round one, and A.D. Mitchell slipped all the way to the Colts in the second. I really like the talent. The effort obviously leaves a lot to be desired. That's something that people have spoken about a lot. There were talks about character concerns, which obviously Colts GM Chris Ballard came out effing and blinding in his press conference to say that he wasn't a huge fan of. We know that the upside of A.D. Mitchell is really there if he can piece things together. And I do like the fit of him with Anthony Richardson as well. So I'd be quite happy getting him in the middle of the second round when this time a couple of weeks ago there were people looking at him around the 108, 109.
Yeah, and that's the second year in a row that Chris Ballard's come out and sort of blasted the media and people for the way they've talked about prospects. Last year, he stood up and defended CJ Stroud and talked extensively about that. And A.D. Mitchell, yes, there's the stuff where he talks about not running at full speed, but the stuff about his diabetes was just absolutely ridiculous to be throwing out there. That said, we did have Dwayne McFarland on the show, and he made a very good case for why A.D. Mitchell was the most overblown wide receiver in this draft. When you look at it analytically, it definitely stands out. I think that Anthony Richardson and A.D. Mitchell are going to be a fun best ball pairing, because if you get that cannon of an arm going downfield, it could really be fun. But the boom-bust nature of him is definitely somebody that I wouldn't feel comfortable taking before about this range in the draft. Rich, back to you at the 207.
Time for me to be a homer. Let's go Malachi Corley to the Jets. I think I love this landing spot. I think he's going to walk in as the Jets starting slot. I think we're going to be able to use him all over the field in inventive ways, get him on gadget plays, jet sweeps, screens. I think he's got the opportunity to carve out a bigger role than just that. And let's not forget, Mike Williams is the other outside receiver who can't stay healthy. So there's opportunity for him to carve out an even bigger role. And as long as Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, you know this offense is going to put up points.
Yeah, I think Malachi Corley is definitely one of those really exciting and interesting players. And if he can get past Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb in Aaron Rodgers' friendship group, then he definitely stands a chance of being fun to watch this year. I'm not sure how high I'd draft him in best ball right now, but I definitely look forward to seeing him playing out there. Mags, where are you going with the 208?
I'll go ahead and take Troy Franklin here, probably the guy that's fallen the most.
Whoa.
It's after the draft.
That's not fair.
I think Tom, you're the one that sent out a tweet about his fantasy like value being like revived and just this jolt of life after he goes back to his quarterback Bo Nix and goes to Denver. I think he should be fine. I'm not as excited as I was, you know, a few months ago about Troy Franklin, but I think this is about as good a landing spot as he could have got with the quarterback as well. So I'll take him here.
The thing for me about Troy Franklin that stood out is when you went back and try to find any kind of highlights or film on Bo Nix, everything that was good seemed to be a Troy Franklin highlight. So
yeah,
although there's definitely reasons to be concerned, put out a short a few weeks back based on some of the stuff from Rich's brilliant rookie guide, which you can get by hitting join down below, $2.99 for nearly 200 pages. And the concerns are real, and that must have been part of the reason why he slipped. But what he does well. And if we're projecting the Broncos to again be in a pass heavy sort of situation because we don't have enough of a team to really keep the scores down low, then that's fine. I mean, if you're going to tell me that we're going to lose by 70 points like we did to Miami every week, then that bodes well for Troy Franklin getting absolute bombs. Lewis, 209, where would you like to go with this pick?
So I took Drake May earlier, and I'll stack his wide receiver one with him here with Jalen Polk. I really like the draft capital. He was rumored towards the end of round one, which potentially could have happened, but went very early day two, which was great to see. He has, you know, a very good NFL body type. He also is really good deep down the field. Drake May has a really strong arm, so that matched up really well. But when I say deep down the field, it's not just getting open, but also he's a hands catcher. He's strong as well through contact, and has good body control with those contested catches, but also a good route runner as well. So I'd be quite happy getting him, you know, getting a player towards the end of round two who went, what, the third pick of round two in the real NFL draft. I'd be very happy with that.
So the New England pass catchers, there's plenty of kind of interesting players. And I know that me and Rich are kind of a little bit higher on Kendrick Bourne than definitely ADP is. But does it feel like anyone's going to emerge, or does it feel like we're just going to get a whole lot of mid and, you know, there's going to be a lot of players scoring like 8 PPR points per week? One player who'll get a touchdown will be useful, and otherwise it's just going to be a real pain in the ass for fantasy this year.
I can see it working out that way. The interesting thing, obviously, with a rookie quarterback coming in is that you will have that possibility to develop chemistry and to end up with a favored target. I know a lot of people, because Javon Baker was one of those who had a real big sort of fan base across Twitter, are saying, you know, Javon Baker's the one to go for over Jalen Polk, which wouldn't be for me, and evidently wasn't for the Patriots either, based off where they selected them. But I think having a rookie quarterback coming in, having a new regime, having new offensive staff as well, gives the potential for things to work differently. And I think his skill set matches up quite nicely with Drake May. Probably not the best of receivers in this class, but I think it matches up quite nicely.
Nice. Rich, 210, what's taking you fancy? You're going to stop the Michael Penix slide?
I was going to say, give me Michael Penix here. Look, I'm comfortable taking him probably 3-4 picks earlier. I think, yeah, it's a pick for 2026, let's be honest, because you're not paying Kirk Cousins to sit on the bench. But there's a reason the Falcons have spent a top 8 pick on him. I like him as a prospect. I've been banging the drum saying he was going to be a first-round pick all off-season. I didn't expect him to go in the top 10. But I think he's got real solid kind of high-end QB2 fantasy outcome. You just might have to wait 2 years for it. So, yeah, think of this as a 2026 first-round pick rather than a 2024 late second, and you certainly feel a lot better about it.
Does that kind of mindset, does that dictate what teams you'd be willing to take Penix on?
No, pretty much any, to be honest, because I'm just viewing it as an ascending asset. You know, how many people right now, if you said, I'll give you a mid-2026 first for your, what are we now, 210? I'm pretty sure every single person in every single situation would snap your hand off on that. That's how I'm viewing this, as Michael Penix is, if he, you know, if Kirk Cousins hadn't assigned with the Falcons, we'd be talking about Michael Penix in and around the JJ McCarthy point in this draft. It's just because Kirk Cousins is sitting there. Well, Kirk Cousins isn't going to be there in 2 years' time, and therefore Michael Penix can be talked about as a mid-first round pick. So, yeah, you need to think about it as a future asset. But how many other players in this draft that we have made with 22 picks in, how many players can you guarantee is going to be worth more in 12 months than they are worth right now you are picking? I can guarantee that for Michael Penix, because he's either, if he sees the field, he's going to be worth more, or if he sits behind Kirk Cousins, it's going to be, well, he's 1 year closer to replacing Kirk Cousins. So in 12 months' time, he's definitely going to be worth more. So I think this, yeah, I can't take him in the first round. I can't take him early second, but this late in the second, it's an absolute screaming value.
I think my only counter to that would be if Kirk Cousins goes out and does what Aaron Rodgers did to Jordan Love and wins MVP, and has a deep playoff run with the Falcons. I think you could easily start hearing, okay, well, Kirk Cousins wants to play till he's 40. Kirk Cousins is feeling great. The Falcons feel great about having Kirk Cousins around long-term. But on the whole, I very much agree with your point. Mags, 211, where are you going with this pick?
Give me that Orr Wilson to Orr Wilson connection over at the Steelers, please. I think we talked about vacated targets earlier. Obviously, Deontay Johnson leaving. So many targets there to gobble up. I think Wilson's a guy that can come in and take a good chunk of them. I think he's going to do really well there. And kind of an underrated player, I think, Roman Wilson as well. Not a lot of people talking about him. I think it's a nice spot for him.
Yeah, it's not flashy, but he's a willing blocker, which will work well for the Steelers. He plays well in play action, which again is going to play well for the Steelers. And let's be real, George Pickens is a very boom or bust profile. Something safe over middle for Roman Wilson, I think that's completely fine, and a player I'd be willing to take maybe slightly higher than that in the second round, depending on my teams. Lewis, 212, finish second round for us, and then we'll rapid fire through round three.
Yep, so this for me is a guy that I've been in on all through the draft process, which is Jalen McMillan out of Washington. So ended up going round three to the Bucks. So can slot straight in as the wide receiver three there. One of the players that I actually comped him to the closest was Chris Godwin, who after 2024 is entirely void years in his contract, so can be cut relatively cheaply. Jalen McMillan to me, probably not going to produce a huge amount early on because they obviously have two good wide receivers ahead of him, but a player that can absolutely be a quarterback's best friend working out of the slot, but also I think has the ability with his route running to work all three levels of the field, and I'd be very happy getting at 212, which is actually probably slightly earlier than you were taking him in mock drafts pre-draft, because I think the NFL recognized the route running chops that McMillan has, but it's someone that I've really liked the whole time, so getting him at the 212 is probably something I'm going to be doing a lot of.
Love it. Quick question for Lewis. You can answer this one. In my primary league, we have a 2-year taxi squad, rookie year and second year. Does that make Penix more attractive, move the needle at all? I'm in a few leagues like this, so I do think it's a really valid question from David here.
So to me, I'm in a few leagues as well that have 2-year taxi. To me, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. The taxi squad to me is the way that is a reflection of the way that NFL teams use the practice squad, that I will look for my kind of third, fourth and fifth round rookies that I think have developmental upside that I can stash there and see if they have anything. With Michael Penix, like, I'm fine to have a bench spot on him if you're looking to take him towards the end of the second round. I don't think it would hugely move the needle because, like Rich said, I think any team that was offered a 26 first for the 210 is probably going to take it. You can find room for him on your bench, and you can put him on taxi for year one in any other league anyway.
Lovely. Right, so we'll fire through this third round fairly quickly. Just give me like one or two sentences on each player and how you feel about him. Rich at the 301.
Let's shoot for the ultimate upside, Jermaine Burton. He could be the most talented wide receiver in this class. He could be out of the league in 2 years. Anything could happen.
I knew that would go in there.
Okay, Mags at 302.
Give me Blake Corum here, a guy that can come in, do a good job. Sean McVay has got no loyalty to running backs, as we've seen a few times. So, yeah, give me Corum.
Lewis, 303.
I'd look for Marshawn Lloyd here. Really good draft capital on day two and going to the Packers. Josh Jacobs, we know, doesn't have the hugest amount of upside, and is also a second contract back.
Yeah, and that contract is very easy to get out for the Packers if they decide to at any point. Rich, 304.
Ben Sinnott, surprisingly good draft capital, second round to Washington. We talked about him earlier. Should have a clear role as a rookie, and I think, given his blocking skills, he could be a 100% snap player, which is incredibly rare at the tight end position.
Nice. Mags, 305.
Going to go with a guy who was my running back two. He slowed down after the draft. I'm going to go with Jalen Wright, mainly because we've seen that Dolphins backfield struggles to stay healthy. Jalen Wright's a guy that come in, if he gets a chance, could deserve more of a snap share, if he gets a chance, that is.
Yeah, and we just be remiss if we didn't just point out the fact that for the last 2 months I've been writing articles saying Devon Achan's best ball ADP of the mid-second round was always overpriced. Rich, 206.
Let's go with your Ravens. Let's go Tez Walker. sleeper potential, really intriguing profile. Think he could fit perfectly with Lamar's game. And let's be honest, Rashod Bateman, as much as you and I love him, Tom, he's not really done great. And I could see a world where Tez Walker's starting to take snaps off him at that X position as early as this year.
Excuse me, Rashod Bateman just signed a new contract. According to Adam Schefter, that makes him a hit. Lewis, I have done you absolutely dirty here and skipped you over there. So I'll give you two picks in a row. Who would you like for your first one?
I'm going to start with Ray Davis. The landing spot in Buffalo is really good. He's a player that I really want to root for with the story behind him. 145 carries from the Bills last year between Latavius Murray, Ty Johnson, Damian Harris and Leonard Fournette. So there's a lot of opportunity there for him. And then probably with the next one, I think I'd look to Luke McCaffrey. It reaches a point in the draft where I'm just looking to chase draft capital and let the league show me that they're better at scouting the later round players than I am.
Lovely. We are going to get to those last few picks in just a second. Where do you guys stand on evaluating wide receiver talent against the wide receiver rooms they get drafted into? E.g., average prospect going into a poor wide receiver room compared to an above average prospect joining a stacked one. That's from Ollie, one of our YouTube members. Mags, it kind of comes back to JSN stuff, Roma Dunze stuff. Anything you'd like to expand upon on that point, or do you feel like we kind of possibly covered it earlier? Anybody else want to weigh in if Mags has got nothing?
Yeah, just wide receiver rooms change. The NFL teams change so fluidly all the time. Just take the better player, I think.
Yeah.
I agree with Mags 100%. This is dynasty. We're looking long term. Don't worry about Keenan Allen or an aging veteran because it's going to move quick.
Lovely. And Mags, I'll come to you for the 309.
I'm going to go a bit different here. I'm actually going to go a guy who can see becoming a starter by the end of the year because he's got not a lot of people to beat out. I'm going to go, I think it's Kareem Vidal, who's just been drafted by the Chargers. I think he's an excellent pass blocker, which you know his coach is just going to absolutely love. And he's got, Gus Edwards and a one-legged J.K. Dobbins to beat out. He got a chance. Sorry, J.K. I love you, J.K. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
We're taking shots at J.K. Dobbins and Rashod Bateman in front of Tom. You're going to make him very unhappy.
I'm just going to cry.
I'm just going to kick you all off the stream. If that, you know, it's just... It's my show now, you guys. Right, let's go. Rich, 310, your last pick of this Superflex rookie three-round draft.
Give me Jacob Cowing, elite production profile, lands with the 49ers in the fourth. When they trade Deebo Samuel away, he's going to have all the targets. And just get me a piece of that offense. I think he could take a while to get there, but something's changing in San Francisco over the next 18 months.
Yeah, taking shots on good offenses is always a nice fallback option. Lewis at 311.
I think I'm going to go Spencer Rattler here. He fell a lot later than we thought he did, but falling to the Saints is very good, seeing as they seem stuck with Derek Carr more than they actually seem to like him. I like the upside of Rattler. There was lots of rumors of him going sort of in the second and being seen as one of the best available players when we got into day two, and then fell all the way to day three and quite far into day three as well. But I don't hate the upside of taking a quarterback who potentially could start at some point midway through this season at the back end of the third.
Yeah, it's a very crowded quarterback room in New Orleans, but I'm a little lower on Spencer Rattler in general, but the crowd in New Orleans just do not like Derek Carr. They were audibly booing him very enthusiastically at times last year. And if he starts every game this year, I'd be surprised. Mags, 312, finish his draft, and then we will just wrap things up after that.
At the back end of the third, I'm just taking big punts here. I'm actually going to go with Jordan Travis, who was drafted by Rich's Jets. I actually really like Jordan Travis's tape before that. I mean, just horrendous injury that he suffered. Don't know how much that's going to affect him. This is someone who potentially would have been a second round, if not a first round pick, if he stayed healthy the whole season. So Aaron Rodgers, not got too much time left, probably. Jordan Travis could come in and could be the guy.
Nice. So, Mags, tell us what you got going on, because I know you're a busy man. You're rebuilding the worst dynasty team in the world on YouTube at the minute. What else is cooking for you?
Yeah, just been doing those 2024 mock drafts. We've got loads more coming up for you now that the draft has finished. We'll compare and see how much that has changed the outlook for these dynasty players. And yeah, if you want to see the worst dynasty team you've ever seen in your life slowly get rebuilt, come and check out the Dynasty Hot Seat on YouTube.
Yes, and it is linked, of course, in the description below. Go and subscribe. Mags's channel is fantastic. Lewis, the Dynasty Pancake, you've been busy churning out content over the last few months. You got anything cooking there?
Yeah, there's a few bits and pieces coming up after the draft, which I'm very excited to start sharing. And there's a lot of different things on there in terms of Dynasty content, looking at trade advice, a few more forays into the analytical space as well. Dynastypancake.co.uk if you want to read some of my work.
Excellent. And we can't thank you guys both enough. We really appreciate you guys when it comes to Dynasty. You know, you've both been on the show multiple times. We really enjoy chatting with you, and everybody should be following you, looking at your work. It's been so much fun doing these mock drafts over the last few months, but mock draft season, it is over. Best ball season, it starts tomorrow. Myself and Tyler will be live at 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. UK, drafting in Best Ball Mania. Wednesday, I should be live if DraftKings goes live. We'll be going two shows a week. Rich has got his Dynasty Rankings video coming out possibly tomorrow. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button. We will be back very soon to get you set up to win in 2024.